Hi, guys. All right. So this is my first time, like, at Porkfest and also just speaking in front of people, so lucky you. That's going to be fun. All right. Let's see if we can figure out how this works a little bit. Do I just click it? Perfect. Okay. So we're going to talk about the war on the poor, obviously. I guess I'll start with kind of who I am. Like you said, I make a lot of TikToks, so basically I kind of bitch about the government online, and that's why it's usually just to my phone is who I'm talking to, but this will be a little different. The reason why this topic specifically is so big for me is because I grew up poor, as you could probably tell, I got to see firsthand kind of how the government policies impact poor people specifically, not just the whole lefty kind of, oh, wouldn't this be great on paper type of thing, but actually the impact that these policies have on poor people. So that's kind of what we're gonna go over. It's like really basic stuff, honestly, but my goal is kind of not to convince you that the government is bad, because I feel like all of you guys already are kind of there, but just to give you some like arguments against especially the lefty kind of empathy thing, and maybe to give you a few things to think about that give you some ammo, right? Like how you can destroy their arguments, fun stuff like that. All the talkers, the speakers here have been really intelligent. I'm just gonna kind of dumb it down, right? Dumb blonde it up for you, basically. Okay, so who is implementing this war on the poor? Obviously, the enemy that we all hate, big government. And how you know you have a big government is every single one of these bullet points, and I think we all kind of agree that we have them, right? Large bureaucracy, extensive regulation, expansive social programs, high taxation and redistribution, all that jazz. Basically, we should topple it. I actually didn't even have to make that clip art. It just came like that. But I'm pretty sure anybody who uses it is put on like a government list, so we're already there, though, people. All right, so when you get into the stats, this is where it gets kind of, like, really crazy, right? And these are all government-backed sources, FYI, so you know they're accurate. But so over 37 million Americans are considered under the poverty line, and the government makes up this poverty line, right? Right now they have it set at $30,000 for a family of four, and I think we can all agree that's, like, basically your toilet paper budget at this point with inflation and everything else. Like $30,000 for a family of four is incredibly low, but that's where they set the poverty line. And what's even crazier is 50% of those people are actually, or wait a second. Yeah, half of them, which is 50%. 50% of those are at 50% or below. So $15,000 for a family of four or less, which is totally wild, but that's how they define poverty. And how do we handle it currently? Well, the whole top-down authoritarian way, of course, right? We throw money at it. So basically in 2022, the federal government spent $1.19 trillion on over 80 different welfare programs. So that's pretty mind-boggling. I don't think a lot of people understand like how many different welfare programs there are. It's pretty gnarly. And that's almost 20% of the total federal budget. And if you want to break it down in like how it impacts you specifically, it's about $9,000 per American household of your tax dollars that are spent on these 80 different welfare programs. So the whole like lefty idea here is that we just treat citizens like children, right? So it's like if we just have daddy government come in and collect all the money from everybody, they can redistribute it and give everybody an allowance, and then we can create this like fair society, right? The problem with this is the government is a really shitty parent. They're just not good. Democrats and Republicans like to argue over like how we make the government a better parent, but I mean, I think we can all agree it's kind of a losing battle there, so the whole idea is to like not have a parent at all, right? But the lefties will come at you with a whole like, have you no empathy thing, right? So that's their whole basis for all of their arguments, and I totally get it, right? It's the whole like, oh, if you care about people, then you have to help them. But what they're not understanding is you can care about people and not also steal money from other people. Kind of pretty basic stuff. When it comes to the utopia argument, right? I don't know if a bunch of you guys are like libertarians, I would assume. I'm sure you've heard the whole like there's no such thing as libertarian utopia. And I totally agree with that, actually. Like, there is no such thing as libertarian utopia, because there's no such thing as utopia, like, with any political philosophy, right? So, so that's kind of, like, what I would say for anything. So all you can do is create the most just society. You're not going to force anything. You're not going to, like, violently force an equal outcome society. And also, that would be really fucking boring, in my opinion, right? It's like, oh, everybody gets 10 potatoes. That's fun. But, so the only way to do it is really just to have equal opportunity. But why does the government not want that? Well, the government wants a monopoly on poverty. Like, the government fully understands that people don't bite the hand that feeds, right? So they want to be the hand that feeds. And one of the really obvious ways of seeing this are the laws all around the country that make it illegal to feed homeless people or require a permit for feeding homeless people. So you basically have to go to the government and say, hey, am I allowed to feed homeless people? Which is kind of totally insane, right? Like, you can feed animals, but you can't feed homeless people. Pretty wild. But what happens with this kind of top-down authoritarian approach that we're currently doing? Well, one of the big problems is dependency traps. So a dependency trap, you guys have probably all seen this, like, at some point in your life with somebody you know, right? Is basically the huge gap between the amount of money and benefits. Sorry, I need a drink. I'm like sweating like a whore in church. But basically, so like say you're a single mom, right? And you qualify for housing, like subsidized housing, subsidized childcare, free health insurance, food stamps, all this stuff. And I'm just gonna like pull a number out, but say you make $30,000 a year and you make all of these extra bennies, right? Well, that's gonna put you at a lifestyle of about like $60,000 a year. But what happens is if you get a small pay raise, so say you get like a promotion and now you're gonna be making $32,000 a year. As soon as you go over that line of where you can qualify for benefits, you'll lose them. So basically she's living at like a $60,000 lifestyle, right, with all the benefits, and then she moves above to that 32, she just drops all the way down to living a $32,000 lifestyle because she's not qualified for those benefits anymore. So that's what you call like a dependency trap. It's basically disincentivizing like getting a promotion, bettering your life, gaining skills. Another thing that they have that does this is, I'm so nervous, I'm sorry. Thanks. Okay. So asset tests, basically. So this also disincentivizes like savings, right? So if she like squirrels away money and I don't know, doesn't buy like a pack of Marlboro Reds every week or something. No, just kidding, that's stereotypical. Okay. Then as soon as she hits a certain amount of savings or assets, all of a sudden she is not qualified for those anymore either. So again, it's just this incentivization process. And if I was like in control of a society, I don't think, like, that's the exact opposite way that I'd be trying to treat my citizens, to incentivize, like, productivity, creativity, and just anything that brings everybody up, right? We're doing it in the exact opposite way. And another thing that people actually don't talk about as much are zoning laws and, like, land use policies. So these are pretty crazy. They can add up to 40% in the cost of some cities to the cost of, or in some cities, to the cost of like housing, and they also make it take a long time to build new homes, right? So if you think about like the housing market and everything that we've gone through recently, you can see how like that can be a huge issue. All right, well, I wouldn't be a libertarian if I wasn't up here yelling taxation is theft, so we're also gonna go over that. That's a pretty basic one, yeah. Taxes steal wealth, and they add unnecessary burden to business. So basically, even if it, like, if a poor person is trying to start a business, obviously the taxes become a problem. But also, if they're just working for a company, the taxes that company has to pay directly impact, like, the amount that they're able to pay their labor, et cetera, the amount of people they're allowed to hire, you know, all that kind of stuff. So anything that impacts businesses also is impacting poor people. So we have to keep that in mind as well. It's not just about like the individual poor people. Okay, so licensing. Licensing is a big one of these. When it comes to poor people starting their own businesses, basically it's like a, kind of like a barrier, like a cost of entry barrier to get into a lot of businesses. And the crazy thing is one in three people now need the government's permission to work. So that's whether or not like you specifically need it because you need to go get a license, or the company that you work for needs to make sure that they're licensed and they're following regulations and things like that. Some really, really ridiculous ones too, when you start getting into licensing requirement talks, are like some states have licensing requirements for florists. So like to put together a good bouquet of baby's breath, you have to have daddy government's okay. Like interior designer, shampooer, and hairstylist. The hairstylist one is really crazy, right? Because in some states it's like 1,300 hours, and that's more than the hours required to become a police officer, which seems a little crazy to me, but I don't know. Can't trust you with scissors, but can totally trust you with a gun. Okay, so even if they get past that, they now have to deal with like massive overregulation, right? This fit on my computer, so FYI. Okay, so this is a big one that the lefties love to go on about, and they'll really like argue you big time on this one. It's minimum wage, but basically, I get it, the whole like living wage thing, but minimum wage, all it does is lead to less job opportunities. So that's a given, like a really obvious one, right? If you have to pay your labor more, you're not able to hire as many people. It's like pretty simple. But also it creates more competition with higher skilled workers. So basically like if you want to raise the minimum wage to $20, all of a sudden you're skyrocketing like low skilled workers all the way up to compete with people who have worked really hard and made their way up to $22 in the previous like setup, right? So now all of a sudden they're competing with each other, and 9 times out of 10, the person that has higher skills is going to win out. So all of a sudden you have taken away a bunch of job opportunities for like high school students, people just entering the workforce, people that want a part-time job, like maybe a stay-at-home mom or something like that. They have a ton fewer job opportunities because they're competing with these higher skilled workers. And then obviously price increases, because if labor goes up, you have to, you know, make that money somewhere. Another big one, this one only applies to businesses with 100 plus employees, but like we've all seen the whole equal opportunity thing, right? And it's also just kind of totally ridiculous that you would have to hire anybody based on like gender or ethnicity. And it becomes a big problem though, because again, it's siphoning resources from these businesses. Like filing an EEO-1 report with any mistakes could result in fines or like getting thrown in jail. So basically companies need to extend a lot of resources to make sure they have the HR reps to go over this, they have the attorneys to go over this and make sure they're filing their paperwork correctly. So again, you're taking money away from being able to hire people or being able to pay people more. So, and this is just like a list of additional regulations that depending on the business you're in, you have to comply by, and it's insane, it's a lot, and this is only a few, like I didn't have room to go over all of them, but like FDA regulations, USDA, state and local inspections, Fair Packaging and Labeling Act, it all adds up to a lot of money. Okay, so one of the things that lefties love to argue, right, is that big corporations are the problem. But the kind of hilarious thing about this is that big corporations wouldn't be the problem that they are without big government. So big government and big corporations, like, love the fuck out of each other. So first of all, government is obviously the biggest monopoly. We've gone over that a little bit, and we'll touch on it a little bit more, but that's kind of their jam. And the whole lobbying thing wouldn't be possible without the strong arm of the state, right? So the fact that companies can buy off all of this power is because there's access to power. There's power to be bought off. If we didn't have that, there would be nothing to buy. There's like no corruption to be had because there's nothing to corrupt, right? And then a good example of the state showing you that they like big business was COVID. I think that was pretty obvious. Like Taco Bell was allowed to keep running, but your mom and pops had to shut down. Like they really showed you right there, like where their priorities lie in that department. It's frozen. So we're gonna wait it out. That's all I got. Do you know how to unfreeze it? Anyone? Yeah, me too. Peter, do you want to come up here and do like a song? Brief? No? Fine. I can sing for you. No, just kidding. That's my bad. Blonde moment. Okay. Basically, the government wants a monopoly on violence, wealth, travel, business, self-defense, etc., and will do everything it can to obtain it. How do big corporations help with that, right? Well, they help them by advocating for overregulation. So a lot of people don't understand this. Like, big business wants overregulation because they have all the resources to comply with all this stuff. They can throw all the money at it. They can throw all the HR reps and all of the lawyers, and what they know about that is it destroys their competition. So people who don't have deep pockets, people who aren't taking Fed funny money, they can't keep up and they can't compete. So big business loves big government. And a great example of how big government like utilizes corporations, actually I got this from Dan back there, Captain Taxation is Theft, so thank you, Dan. In 1943, Congress passed the current Tax Payment Act, which required employers to withhold taxes from employees' wages and remit them quarterly. So basically, that's how you got tax withholding. That's why all of your companies now just straight up like withhold your taxes and you don't even get to see that shit, right? It's because the government was trying to get everyone on an individual level to pay in. They were like, hey guys, can you like pay income tax and help for the war effort? And they were Americans, so they're like, fuck you and your taxes. And they didn't want to do it. So basically Congress buddy-buddied with corporations who were employing these people and got them to agree to withholding. And now we have the whole like system that we have now. So that's how they... This is going to take some time, guys. All right, so that's how they do it. And then inflation, which we touched on a little bit already, is obviously another big part of this, right? The whole money printing, like government-backed policies of money printing, disproportionately impact poor people. So if bread goes up a dollar, it's really going to impact somebody who is already kind of budgeting their grocery budget, right? As opposed to somebody who's really wealthy, bread going up a dollar doesn't make a huge difference, especially if assets are also going up at the same time and assets are being inflated as well because they own a bunch of assets, so their money is actually going up, while poor people can start to not be able to afford like bread and milk and stuff like that. Okay, and just kind of any of the government-backed fiscal policies in general, like what we have going on right now where we have all this talk about needing to raise the unemployment rate, that disproportionately impacts poor people as well. Like, who do you think is going to be employed? Unemployed. It's poor people. Oh, geez. Okay, now we get into the fun stuff, guns. So, gun control. This one also disproportionately affects poor people. So obviously the average police response time is 5 to 6 minutes, but when you get out into rural areas, that can be 20 minutes plus or even less if they like determine it to be not important. And this one I've seen directly because like I grew up in a rural town and we didn't have a police department. So maybe why I'm libertarian, I don't know. But we just like didn't have one, right? So all you had was state troopers who would be who knows how far out. So if you had an issue, you'd have to call, and stateies would get called, and they could be 20 minutes away, they could be 40 minutes away, like, you have no idea, and in the meantime, you're dealing with a potentially life-threatening situation, right? So the state has completely monopolized your right to protect yourself, to protect your family. You're supposed to just sit around and wait for the cops to show up. Again, disproportionately impacting poor people who tend to live in more rural areas or inner cities where police also don't go. There's plenty of those as well. And then victimless crimes. So victimless crimes do the same kind of thing. It takes somebody who doesn't have a lot of money, and if they get hit with a victimless crime, all of a sudden they're in a situation where potentially they owe fines and they have to pay the money back, or they get put in jail where, you know, we're gonna go over that in the next one, but with bail and stuff like that. One, they can potentially not have the ability to pay bail, but two, it starts a domino effect in people who don't have a lot of money's lives, right? So if you don't show up to work, all of a sudden you can lose your job and you don't have any money in the bank, you don't have any savings, you can lose, like you can have your utility shut off, you can get kicked out of your house, and all of a sudden you start putting people in situations where they feel like they have no other option. So we kind of have this like cyclical thing going where we take people who did a victimless crime or petty crime and put them in a situation where they don't have the ability to better their lives, or they feel like the only option they have to make money or a decent amount of money or enough money that they need is to do like commit crimes that actually have victims involved. So it's a pretty like shitty situation. What did we learn about empathy? Okay, we're gonna go over kind of everything and then just compare it to the lefty arguments, right? So what did we learn, class, type of thing. All right, so obviously reducing regulation is important and something we should be focusing on, because allowing people from socioeconomic classes, from all socioeconomic classes, to start and maintain businesses is empathetic. Gatekeeping it to only the rich and connected is not, right? And also would provide more job opportunities. The big argument here that you're gonna hear from lefties is, but regulation keeps us safe. And my whole response to that is typically you'll survive a bad haircut. Like, one, we've all experienced a bad haircut, so obviously the regulation doesn't really do that much anyway, right? 1,300 hours and I still got shitty bangs. So you don't need daddy government to come in and tell you if somebody can cut your hair or not. You just don't go there again, tell your friends not to go there, write a bad Yelp review, whatever. And then you do the opposite with somebody who does a good job, right? And it's the same thing if you get a shitty bouquet from a florist, or if somebody like doesn't do the kind of interior design you want. We don't need the regulations, they're ridiculous. All right, so when we talk about reducing taxes and cutting government spending. So not stealing the fruits of other people's labor to redistribute is empathetic. Taking it under threat of violence is not. Good job, guys. All right. Allowing people to choose where to chip in and what policies seem worth spending money on is empathetic. Taking it by threat of force and just doing whatever you want with it is not. The argument here you're going to get is, but my roads. Do you guys get that one a lot? God, I get it every day, the my roads thing. Oh, my God. Okay, so the only reason you don't think that there's an alternative is because the government has monopolized it, right? So you're not allowed to maintain a road, you're not allowed to build a road, only the government's allowed to do that. But human's gonna human, right? So humans have provided humans what humans need throughout all of humanity. It's what we do. So basically, if we didn't have the government coming in as a middleman, which, by the way, that's what it is, it's a middleman. Like, Lindsey Graham is not out there with a shovel fixing potholes. I would fucking pay to see that, though, that'd be hilarious. They just are stealing your money and then picking a construction company, right? So if we didn't have that, all you would have is citizens that are driving on roads every day that have potholes and are ruining their vehicles, costing them money. Businesses, exact same thing, right? Their trucks are driving on these roads, it's costing them money. They're gonna be incentivized to fix the roads. People are gonna be incentivized to chip in. And the whole like chip in argument drives me nuts too, because lefties will be like, well, nobody would pay it if it wasn't forced. That I've seen so many GoFundMes for the most ridiculous stuff. Like, if a hamster needs a wheelchair, it's gonna get it. Like, people will pay. And so people chip in for stuff all the time. People chip in for like hurricane relief, just people chip in. And they would definitely chip in if it had something to do with, like, if it impacted them specifically, right? Like the hamster thing, it doesn't even impact them, I don't know, but I've seen it. The arguments here that of like what the government does with your money, just bring up like really stupid government spending shit. And this isn't even like getting into like the billions of dollars to Ukraine or anything crazy, right? Which that's a whole other thing. But putting fish on treadmills, that's what I always say. I'm like, do we really need to put fish on treadmills? I shit you not, that was a study. It cost $560,000 of taxpayer money. The next one, proving that frat brothers like to party, $5 million. I could have just like asked you guys, hey guys, do frat bros like to party? Like five, that's a lot of booze that they bought, I don't know. Finding out if dinosaurs could sing, proving that gingerbread houses are earthquake proof. You can look these up, I'm not making it up, it's nuts. Like, we would probably survive without this kind of spending, I would guess. And if people wanted to chip in for this kind of stuff, I mean, whatever floats your boat, but I feel like if you got the choice on where you could spend your money, you would, you know, maybe choose a little differently, right? And also, along with this, you can also throw in the whole, like, where does the forced sharing end? So if you want to get into, like, oh, well, we have to. Like, if you care about poor people, we have to steal your money and give it to them. It's like, okay, well, where does that end? Your phone looks really nice. Not everybody that has that nice of a phone, or your car, or you go get Starbucks every day, or you have a Netflix, or you have food and people in Africa don't. Like, how much do we have to take away from you to make it even and to make it equal? Again, we'll get to a point where it's like everybody just gets 10 potatoes. And the whole potato thing, too. Hold on, we're going to go on a potato rant. Because, so even in a situation like that, you are still creating this whole, like, hierarchical structure, right? So even if you're like, okay, we're going to live in a perfect society where everybody just gets 10 potatoes every single day and everything's even and there's nothing that anybody can complain about, right? Well, who's going to decide who gets the potatoes? You have to have some sort of hierarchical structure. Now you have somebody in a position of power. Now that person figures out, hey, potatoes are currency. Hey, I can, like, have people do things for me in exchange for, like, switching a few potatoes here or there. Somebody pisses me off, uh-oh, I lost a few of your potatoes. I don't even know what happened to them. You know what I mean? Like, even in that situation, then who's regulating the regulators? It's always, there's no end to it, right? Okay, what else do we learn? Allowing self-defense is empathetic, right? So forcibly outsourcing and monopolizing self-defense and defense of one's family is not empathy. Anytime a lefty tries to, like, argue this, it just, I mean, just be like, okay, is that empathetic? Threatening people with violence, never empathetic. These are pretty basics. Oh, and the state creates and maintains poverty. The end. That's all I got for you. I blew through it. Do you guys have any questions? No? Great. Oh, okay. I can try to answer it for you.
Hello, it's live.
Hi.
Hi. Back in 1933, FDR passed an executive order that if you ever went to a safe deposit box and withdrew some gold, there will be an IRS agent standing next to you to confiscate it. Do you think this is going to happen again before 2024?
A lot of people are talking about that, right? Like the whole, like, gold being a legal thing. I am white-pilled, personally. Like, I try to stay white-pilled, you know, like the whole, like, try to stay, like, upbeat and positive. And I really don't think it's going to come to that kind of stuff anymore. Or if it does, like, I think that enough people, especially since COVID, have, like, woken up, or whatever you want to call it, and have realized how shitty the state is, that I don't think it's going to happen, or people won't comply, personally. But like I said, I'm, like, overly white-pilled, so I don't know if you... Yeah, the state sucks. Yeah, totally. 100%. Hey, Dan.
There we go. So I know you're kind of like preaching to the choir here. What's been your experience on like your TikTok or whatever, like reaching out to people who actually fit the demographic that are either in poverty or leaning left because they think they're in poverty or whatever? What's been your response with them with this type of stuff?
So the commies hate me pretty bad, but like when it comes to, so I've had a lot of people actually be like, I've had a lot of positive feedback with that kind of stuff on like, oh, you gave me something that I didn't think about it that way. So that's been kind of cool. Like I said, like the whole dumbing it down thing is kind of what I do. I really dumbed it down this time. I'm sorry, guys. But so that's been really nice. But I think the big thing with like the socialists and the commies that I keep getting is this whole like, well, that's not fair thing. Like that's really the only argument that they have, right? Is like, that's not fair. Or that I'm like a white supremacist or a Nazi or any, you know, take your pick, whatever. But it really just boils down to them being like, well, that's not fair. And you can try to kind of explain it. But at the end of the day, really, like, this kind of stuff only works on people who are already have like a little bit of free thinking going on, right? Or they've already had experiences with the government that were not so great. I think a lot of the socialists and the commies are kind of like this suburban or college kid demographic from what I've seen personally, who haven't had a lot of experience with the state. I don't even know if they've like been to a DMV or like a post office. Like they just don't like interact like that. So they have this kind of, again, ironically enough, utopian idea of what the government will do for them. And it's like, oh, the government's just all going to give us UBI, and then we can like run around and create art and like eat grapes by the river. I don't know what they picture, but and they don't realize that like not everyone can be an artist in the society. Like somebody has to plumb the toilets. I don't know. And they kind of have this idea that it's like, no, it'll all be great and beautiful, and money just, I don't know, comes out of my butthole, and that's it. So that's my experience. It's like, you can't really change the socialists and the commies, but people who have actual real-world experience with, like, the government and police officers and just kind of shitty policy, if you explain stuff to them on, like, a really bare-bones level, like, they come around really quickly, and they're like, oh, shit, I never thought about it like that. So, yeah. Good? Good deal. Bye.